The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
Na, 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 na. Stirring amidst our modern nation, gleaming bright white with ancient hope. Don't try to explain her incomparable beauty, or hold back the tears when you touch her wall. This is where Shlomo created the temple of God. His nexus of song and of prayer endures on and on. Yerushalayim, the cradle of peace.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. Sit back, relax, take in the beautiful July morning. It is indeed. In this half hour of the show, we will be featuring an interview with Elaine Kahn, who is a Detroit mother of an IDF soldier. They call them lone soldiers, fighting now, or somewhere. She won't tell me where he is. Somewhere in Israel. We have a wonderful excerpt of a cappella music. We're still doing that. In the second half hour of the show, we'll be featuring the Jewish Hour's own poet laureate, Michael Druck, who is going to share some of his insightful, inspirational, and wonderful poetry. The portion of the week is Devarim, the book of Deuteronomy 1:1. We started this week. We have a really amazing Hasidic story at the end. You want to stay tuned for that. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Ten terrorists entered Israel territory and split up into two teams. One team headed towards Erez and the second towards Nir Am. These are villages near the border. An IDF drone eliminated the squad that entered towards Erez, and ground forces eliminated the squad that turned towards Nir Am after a pitched battle. Israeli troops in southern Gaza captured 150 Hamas Palestinians, dozens of whom surrendered voluntarily. All of the detainees were later released, which I should put a question mark next to that. It should be read, all of the detainees were later released? Rioting broke out in Arab East Jerusalem following the death of two Palestinians at a rally north of Jerusalem. More than 10,000 Arabs protested Arab Operation Defensive Edge. Shots were fired, and both the IDF and PA claim the other side fired the shots. About 30,000 people attended the funeral of Sergeant Max Steinberg. Max was a lone soldier from Texas who made Aliyah. He served in the Golani Brigade and was killed in Gaza. Jerusalem Mayor Nir Barakat eulogized Max by saying that Max had made his decision to move back to Israel while on a birthright trip to Israel in 2012. He was standing on Mount Menuchos, which is a burial place, when he came across the grave of a fallen soldier who had come from America to fight in the IDF. And he's buried near that man. Foreign worker in southern Israel has been killed after being hit by a mortar fired from Gaza. The number of civilians killed by Gaza fire is now up to 3 after 20 days of Operation Pillar of Defense. Israeli President Shimon Peres officially exited Israeli politics for the first time in 60 years as his successor, Reuven Rivlin, the new president, was sworn in. Peres, age 91, has served as prime minister, foreign minister, minister of defense, and a long list of other positions. The Maccabi Haifa soccer team was attacked during a preseason match against France in Salzburg, Austria. The attackers were identified as Turkish immigrants. No one was hurt as the attackers fled once the Israelis started fighting back. A second match in Salzburg was canceled. And finally, in response to the aviation boycott, there's always something that has to come out good or something bad, right? In response to the aviation boycott, Israel opened Ovda Airport, located 60 miles north of Eilat, as an alternative to Ben-Gurion. Currently, over 200 flights fly in and out of Ben-Gurion daily. Ovda will handle about 80 flights a day. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are with Elaine Kahn, who is a Detroit mother of an IDF soldier currently in Israel. Thank you so much, Elaine, for coming on the show.
Hi.
Our prayers and our concerns are with you and all the other mothers of IDF soldiers out there. Let's start. Can we first of all, I don't want to encroach on your privacy, can we give your son a first name so we know who we're talking about?
Josh.
Okay, that's good. So at what point, or how old, this is probably two questions, did Josh feel like he wanted to be in Israel for any length of time?
Well, he went for his gap year after high school. To a yeshiva to learn for a year.
Could you first of all say, what's a gap year?
A gap year is a year before you go into university, between high school and entering. So usually it's like in your 18th year.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different programs. There's volunteer programs, there's learning programs, there's like placement on kibbutzim, Magen David Adom, you volunteer to be a medic, and they train you. So Josh chose a yeshiva to learn in-depthly at a very high level Jewish learning, and it's known as Shana Aleph, the first year, because what happens is a lot of the programs want you to go further, you know, to go a second year and mm-hmm. maybe even get smicha to continue. But he started just for 1 year, and he made simultaneously got accepted into University of Michigan in the School of Engineering. And the plan was he would spend his gap year and return home and make a life for himself, getting a degree and, you know, building his life. And what happened in his first year in the yeshiva is, you know, obviously a connection the Jewish people and to Israel. And when he came home for Passover of that year, of the gap year, and visited U of M campus, you know, to visit friends and whatnot, he became very solidified in his desire to return to Israel, not just for the rest of the gap year, but to make Aliyah and to join the army. He made a very clear, mature decision that his life would not be here.
Okay, so let's when you were happy to send him off for a year to Jerusalem, I call it personally, all my kids have gone off, and I call it the 1 year all expenses paid vacation in a biblical theme park in Israel, basically the way I refer to it. The kids go, they have a good time, they actually learn something, they make an attention, like you say, they make an attachment to their people, to the country. Like my wife says, Israel's such a great place that when you ask the guy sweeping the street, how is everything going today, he responds, Baruch Hashem. You know, yeah. So it's a great place to be for a kid who's just to put their life, you might say, on hold for a year. So I suppose you were really happy that he had made that choice to spend a year before going to university. No, Elaine?
Oh, completely. That's what I want for each of my children, because, as you know, life goes speedily forward, and you'll never have that time again. And I think university is vital, as all education is. But I also recognize that it's a time that will never be replaced. And some people take a junior year abroad during university. Some people go to Israel after university. But I felt that given preference, you know, jumping into university right after high school isn't so vital, that these opportunities exist in Israel to go learn. And it was, you know, we worked hard to find a good match for him. We didn't just pick any program. He was a very diligent learner, and he wanted a serious program with serious peers. And the first day he arrived of his gap year, he called me up, and he was so happy. And I said, "Why are you so happy?" He said, "Mom, I've never been with so many people who love to do what I love to do." And I said, "What's that?" He goes, "To learn."
Very, very impressive.
Yeah, it's a very good school. It's Yeshiva Har Etzion. It's otherwise known as Bush. And there were phenomenal teachers there, phenomenal peers that he could relate to, because he loved learning. But he, I think for Joshua, the desire to be Israeli, to not have any special consideration, he just wanted to be a normal Israeli. Because when he told me about Aliyah and doing the army, I asked him to do university first, and he said, "No, all the 18-year-olds go in. I'm already old. I'm going to be 19. I want to do what every Israeli has to do, serve." And he didn't want any exception from the rule. He wanted to. He is fluent in Hebrew, and his only regret is he still, you know, has an accent. He doesn't have, you know, the true Israeli accent.
Yeah, they can still tell he's an American. Ta American, yes, you're American. Indeed. So was this, where is Josh in the order of your kids?
He's the oldest.
Okay, so you don't have any experience with this, people
no.
going to Israel, not coming. Did you, as a younger person, spend extended time in Israel?
Yeah, I started taking Josh when he was 11, and then the middle one, Joe, was probably 9, and the littlest one is Solomon, and he probably was about 6.5, 7, and we would go each summer on a exploration trip. I personally have always wanted to live in Israel, but it was like le'at because of, you know, my spouse's desire to remain here. But I think that Israel is a miracle, and I wanted them to see the the amazing what Israelis have done. It's not just the land, it's the people. And I it would be awful not to be with that, you know, to miss out on that.
Okay, so your sentiments now have basically been transferred to your son, Josh. So it may have been as a bit of a surprise when he said that he wanted to forgo University of Michigan and a career in engineering and make Aliyah, emigrate to Israel, but it shouldn't have shocked you. You should have said, well, that's like a normal thing to decide now, Josh. Am I correct?
No, I was not. I wasn't even surprised because I had spent about 2 years from the age of 21 to 23 working in Israel after my university degree, partly at Haifa University and in a shelter for battered women in Haifa. And I know that when you're there and then return here, you know, outside of Israel, you know, and I was not like a practicing Jew, but there's an osmosis of, you know, being with other Jews and being not just a minority, and that's irreplaceable. So when he came back here and saw what was before him, which was a great opportunity at University of Michigan, there's no denying that, and wonderful friends and his home and family, but to compare that to being in Israel, it was obvious to me why he would choose that. I mean, hands down. So I obviously had concerns about him going into the army. You know, I remember before I left when I lived in Israel that one day I would have a family, and the struggle to have kids in the army was not a positive thing to look forward to. And when I had a chance to have a family of my own here, I always thought I would have girls, so I would never have this issue, but I have boys. And he did the Aliyah process with Gerin Tzibar, which is a lone soldier program, in which, again, like the yeshiva, we really worked hard to find a good fit for how he would make this acclimation, and they were amazing. They have placement on kibbutzim. You can choose religious or non-religious. They give you an adopted family, and I give my greatest gratitude, not just to Hashem, but to this all the people who worked with this Gerin Tzibar, because they really try to help these kids.
Let me answer that. If you're just tuning in, our guest today is Elaine Kahn. She's a Detroit mother of an IDF soldier. Her son made Aliyah at the age of 19 and is currently serving in the IDF. Explain to us a little bit more about the lone soldier program.
Right. So this is for people who, young people who are of Army age service, who make Aliyah but have no immediate family in Israel. And the powers that be in Israel recognize the tremendous challenge before any soldier in the army, but especially for somebody who has no one to come home to. You know, no one to, you know, when you get out of the army on a break, whether it's training or in service, you're exhausted, number one. And number two, you really don't feel like doing your laundry or cleaning up or making food. And to have no family to come home to is not a, it's not doable. It's, you know, it burns people out. And so they set up various programs, I guess, throughout the history of Israel. And this Gerin Tzibar, which in English means seeds of becoming a Sabra. They created these workshops and group formations where they specifically place people, you know, young people with other young people of like-minded, almost like units, and they grow together. And they, like I said, they get adopted families, and they have an apartment, and all these things are taken care of. They get to drop their laundry off before Shabbat, and then after Shabbat, they get their clean laundry, and they go back to the army. And they don't have to worry about paying an electricity bill because the apartment comes with everything, and people bake them cakes, and there's arranged outings and Shabbatons where they can all hear about each other's process and any problems. And like, for example, a normal soldier, if they have a problem, they have their family to help them. So in the lone soldier situation, they don't have their family, but this is like a substitute cooperative, let's say, that they help each other. They get it. Each lone soldier wants a certain position in the army, and so they get they help each other. They give each other strength through the testing process, through the training process. If anyone gets injured, it's a support group. God forbid, even in training, mishaps happen. Somebody sprains an ankle. So it's like an entire system where their well-being is considered.
Mm-hmm. Do they get like a surrogate mommy and daddy?
Yes, they get an adopted family. Josh's family on his kibbutz have their own family. They have four daughters and a younger son. And I heard from the families on the kibbutz when I went, they fought over who would get Joshua. And this family got him, and they have been, especially in the recent situation in Gaza, they have been my lifeline. And when the kids, the other kids and I go visit, they house us, they feed us, they treat us like we're their family.
And, oh, that's awesome.
They are so wonderful, so inclusive, so caring. Like somebody said, oh, it's just an adopted family. We've heard about that. It's like, no, I would take the adopted part out. They are like family.
That's really amazing. So did you confer with your corresponding mother and tell him, well, Josh likes his brownies chewy, not fudgy, or any of that type of stuff, just to make him feel more at home?
Well, Josh loves his adopted mom and loves her cooking and loves all that she does. He said when he first met them, he called me and said, she's a lot like you. So there was no need. Huh. And plus, Josh can speak up for himself. And also, Josh is open to different experiences, and she cooks differently, and he likes it. It's, he still likes when he comes home, and I make, so it's good. It's overall, everything is for the good.
Terrific. I'm really glad that they have that support. That's really a tremendous thing and tremendous service, and it probably keeps your son sane through all of this.
He's very close with this his group, the Green Sabar. They're like sisters and brothers, and some of them are already getting married. And like I said, it's like they're a lifeboat. They're in a lifeboat all together, and they share, and they're honest, and they're loved, and when I go visit, I get pizza Motzei Shabbos in town and bring it back for everyone, because
mm-hmm.
they're like, it's all of a sudden I've got like 15 kids, actually plus the other two, 17 uh-huh. kids.
17, there you go.
And I do, I adore them, and I give each one of these lone soldiers my utmost admiration and gratitude, because mm-hmm. they did not have to do this. And I think all of Israel knows this about the lone soldiers. They didn't grow up knowing that they would serve, knowing full well they have other options before them to live a life without potential threat in this manner. And they are highly regarded there. A lot of Israelis think they're crazy.
Sure, if you could go without this, why would you do this? Sure, understood.
Yeah, oh my gosh, you don't have to do this, but again, so many that I've met there in Josh's group, as well as Joshua, there's no place else on earth they would rather be. They would mm-hmm. prefer that this danger wasn't before them, that you know, Hamas was not doing what they're doing, but given that they are, they, each one of them I met with would never desert, you know, their desire to protect the Jewish people and Israel.
Okay. Again, if you're just tuning in, our guest today is Elaine Kahn. She's the mother of a 19-year-old serving...
No, he's 21.
Now he's 21. So he was. It's been 2 years that he's doing this. Okay. His name is Josh, and he's in the IDF and has been there for 2 years now. Before Operation Protective Edge, how often did you get a chance to communicate with Josh via telephone, Skype, et cetera?
Very regularly. Very consistently. You know, we're big on phone calls because I'm not the biggest expert with the computer and being home in time for the Skyping, and we've tried different things, but the phone, you know, seems to be our most regular thing, except for the last week. Over a week, I just write him on email because there is no contact, but I feel the need to do my part.
So during the last 2 years before this, how did he describe his situation, how he spent his day, what military life was like, his bunk, his brigade, et cetera, his commanding officers?
How did he describe it?
Yes.
Well, first of all, I have to say that Joshua goes prepared. He's, if they say, bring a flashlight, toilet paper, you know, whatever else you got to bring, he has everything because it's just who he is. He's a really good listener. He's very organized. And what he experienced was the real Israel, which most of the kids didn't bring toilet paper. Rarely anyone brought a flashlight. So he's in a regular unit. He's not, you know, he didn't specify to be in a religious unit. And so he's dealing with regular people with their own maturity levels, and Josh happens to be very mature, very organized, and so there was, you know, a mismatch in that, but it's something I said, get used to it, you know, bring extra toilet paper or say no.
Life's little challenges.
And, you know, they'll learn, and but Josh is a very caring person, and he wants the Army to be the best. He wants his apartment to be really clean when he comes home, and then there's reality. There's roommates, there's people with their own backgrounds, their own standards, and but he perseveres, and I know even in this moment he's doing the best that he can, as he always has, and he has very high standards.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you, but has he been able to convey details of what's going on with his day-to-day life now as Operation Defensive Edge is going
on? No, there's no contact. I did receive a photocopy of a letter that he was able to send out last night, which is a great relief, just saying it's hot, it's hard, and it's like nothing I've ever done before. I'm well. Please don't worry too much. And I can't wait to see everybody. And he thinks of how everyone else is doing. So.
It's amazing. Okay. I said at the onset, our prayers and our concern are with Josh and all the other soldiers that are serving in the IDF now, that they should all return safely in this conflict should come to a finality of all finalities, and we should hear good news. And we thank you so much for sharing your story with us here on the Jewish Hour.
You're welcome.
Okay, we're going to, our guest was Elaine Kahn, whose son Josh is in the IDF for the last 2 years. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We have up next, is Michael Druck online? How are you today, Michael?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank God. We're doing well. We are doing well. We're just introducing you as the poet laureate of The Jewish Hour. You have been doing this, I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's since 1998 coming on a regular basis. And hope we've got something really interesting for us to, if you could share some poetry that you've written for us, please.
Okay. The title of the poem is, How Do You Measure Holiness? See the Jews in their prayers, holy prayers, sitting intently in their chairs, then standing and bending here and there, hoping to catch his ear in the holy air, for Hashem is listening here and there. God is himself everywhere, even when his people are unaware. Is there enough in a prayer, any prayer? Or does God expect more? Fair is fair. Is that enough, just a prayer? Or is it for show anywhere? What if a Jew is on a street anywhere? Does he exude holiness? Or as the Torah says, to love one's neighbor here and there. Who has not sinned, raise your hand. Better keep it to yourself, God will know. Woman to child, child to man. By the way, mitzvahs change everything.
That is one of the most profound poems I think you've ever read for us on the Jewish Hour. That is really incredible. You know, my grandmother, my Bubby, had an expression which in Yiddish sounds really good. How's your Yiddish, Michael?
It used to be much better.
Okay, so I'll say it slowly and loudly. So anyway, so if you don't say, if you speak to somebody who doesn't speak your language, you just say it louder and slower. That makes them understand it, right? Anyway, it says nit kein kunst zu sein a frumme Yid in shul, is what she used to say. It's no big deal to be pious in the synagogue, because in synagogue everybody's got their prayer book, and they have their prayer shawls if they're men, and they have their prayer decorum on, and everybody looks really pious. It's when they're out in the world, do you realize that God's like right there just the same as when you're in the synagogue, and how are you acting now? So that was actually quite wonderful, and I'm glad that you were able to share this. We got time for one more. Have you got one more for us?
I've got one more. It may not be as good, but we'll...
No editorializing allowed on the show. Sorry, Michael. Just we'll let the listening audience be the judge.
I heard that tune, Lord our God. I've never heard before. I sang it as a part of me. Now it's lost forevermore. Was it something you sent to me, sung by someone long ago? Perhaps a tzaddik or a sage, but I would want to know. I sung that tune unknown to me. Perhaps it was a blessing in disguise. A little nudge from you, perhaps, to open up my eyes. an opening for heaven's sake or for mine. Please bring me back, O Lord, and renew the days of old.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I like that. What were you, what mind frame were you in when you wrote that specific poem? What were you thinking about?
I was brought up in a very Orthodox family, and we only spoke Yiddish at home out in Long Island, New York in the early 40s. And I remember tunes that probably my grandmother sung that one day a song came back to me. I just don't remember where I heard it. And that was the basis of the poem, but in a way I was asking God to bring me back and renew those days of old in a way so I could remember who sung it and what it meant to whoever sung it. It was probably my grandmother.
Mm-hmm. A story about your bubby, too, as well. We've got both bubbies on deck today. Do you remember what the song was?
I have, no, not at all. I've completely forgotten. Completely forgotten, but it came to me in a dream. There was an incident. I don't know how much time you have, but there was.
We got a couple minutes.
What's that?
We have a couple minutes.
Okay. I had a dream, and I was walking down the streets of Moscow, and I saw an old synagogue, and I went in, and there was a man praying. Just one man, and he sang a song, and I woke up suddenly because I remembered where that song came from. It is the conclusion of a piece by Modest Mussorgsky, a very famous Russian composer, and it's played. The tune is at the end of the Night on Bald Mountain. It's a very somber, beautiful song. And then I realized that very song, that very tune, was a variation on the same tune that Mussorgsky used in a piece called Pictures at an Exhibition, which two Jews, a rich Jew and a poor Jew, were arguing. And the poor Jew is the melody that Mussorgsky used for the poor Jew was the exact same melody in a variation style that he used on Night on Bald Mountain.
Uh-huh. Okay. Very good. We want to thank you so much, Michael Druck, poet laureate of the Jewish Hour. And last we spoke, there was something in the hopper, the collected works of Michael Druck. How are we doing with that?
Still working on it, God willing. One of these days you will say to me, Michael, are we ready yet? And I will say to you, yes.
I'm not even going to ask the question. I expect an autographed copy delivered to my door.
Absolutely. You'd be the first one on the list.
Okay. Thank you so much, Michael. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Hey, Shul Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We need a little music to perk us up a bit. Michael Druck was a very good segue between Elaine Kahn, very emotional. I was all choked up. I had to hold down the silent button. We have this thing, it's called a cough button. You go, and you go, and then you can't hear me coughing into the mic. So I had my finger on the silent button for pretty much a lot of that interview. But Michael Druck kind of perked us up a bit. This is a cappella, a.k.a. Pella. The Benny Friedman song, Yesh Tikva, There Is Always Hope.
Sarota agot, achiyuch nela machal tiret. יעבוד והכל יסתדר כי השם יעזור יש תקווה אם נשאיר כולנו יחד יש אמונה חזקה מכל הפחד לא ניפול, לא נרד כי אנחנו לא לבד יש לנו השם אחד יש תקווה אם נשאיר כולנו יחד יש אמונה
accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have, this week is the portion of Devarim. It's the beginning of the book of Deuteronomy. 1-1. It is also referred to as Shabbos Chazon because of the Haftorah. During the Greek occupation of Judea, there was a prohibition of reading the Torah, the five books, in synagogue. So it was instituted. For some reason, they didn't mind if you read from the prophets. So the rabbis would read in the synagogue a section of the prophets which has something to do with the portion of the week. And for this week, they chose the beginning of the book of Isaiah. Isaiah, the first 27 verses, Isaiah 1:1 to 1:27. And the first words of the book of Isaiah are Chazon Yeshayahu, Isaiah had a vision. Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, who lived some 250 years ago plus, commented about this portion, this Shabbos, that it, sometimes it loses the idea. It's not usually called Shabbos Parshas Dvarim. It usually is called Shabbos Chazon. But it's not called Chazon Yeshayahu, that Isaiah had a vision. It's just called the Shabbos of Vision. So Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev pointed out that every person, sometime during the 25 hours of Shabbos, from sundown Friday night until dusk Saturday night, is shown a vision of the third temple. And it's mentioned that some people see it really close, and some people see it far away. And for some people, it's so far away that they don't even realize what they're looking at. So you could ask the question, if I'm looking at something and I'm not seeing what I'm looking at, I don't even know what it is that I'm looking at it, so what purpose does it have looking at it? Very interesting question. Judaism is a general point of philosophy that if a tree falls in the woods and there's no one there to hear it, it still makes a noise. It's still going to have the effect, even though you didn't perceive it. Because like this, the fact that you're shown something and don't even know of its, and not even cognizant of its presence, it still has this effect. Because what's the idea of seeing something? If I tell you, by the way, sometime in the nebulous future, you're going to get such and such. And then every once in a while, I show you the such and such. So then what does that do? That increases your yearning for the such and such. Back in the early 90s, the Rebbe, Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was the Rebbe, commented that as far as he could tell, the world really is ready for the Messiah. The world is ready for the end of days, whatever you'd like to call this epic period of the Messiah's coming. Everything that needs to be done has been done. But yet, this is talking in the early 90s, this is 20 years ago already, more than 20 years. Mashiach, the Messiah, isn't here yet. What's the deal? So the Rebbe, he gave two possible answers. And I suppose that they're sort of intertwined. He said that the world most likely is missing one act of goodness and kindness. And it could very well be that you, and I'm pointing towards my microphone, like I'm addressing you as an individual singular. That's you singular. Just might be the person to do the act of goodness and kindness to somebody. Now, what does it mean, an act of goodness of kindness? An act of goodness and kindness means I am doing this in a total altruistic way. I'm not expecting anything back. I'm not expecting to get anything for it. I don't need thanks or publicity. And I'm not even doing this to encourage and rush and speed the Messianic era. I'm doing this act of kindness and goodness because acts of kindness and goodness need to be done. You could be that person. And when that one person does that one deed, it will tip the scales and indeed usher in the Messianic era. The other possibility is that, let's say I want to give you something, and you show absolutely no interest in getting the thing I want to give you. This is like, you know, you buy your spouse a birthday present, and you say, I got you this birthday present. And they take a look at the birthday present and they say, why, thank you. This is lovely. And then it gets put away and is never seen ever again. It's like, oh, well, that one went over really well. I think next time what I should buy is a lead balloon. That'll go over better. So
if there's no interest to it, if you don't show some sort of piquedness to what it is that I'm offering you, maybe I'm just not going to offer it to you. So the Rebbe suggested maybe what the world really needs is heightened awareness of the imminent arrival of the Messiah so as to encourage people's wanting it to happen, that we should show the Almighty, yes, you're ready to give it, we are ready to receive it. We want Mashiach now. That's the bottom line. That's what Chazon Yeshayahu is all about. That it's Shabbos Chazon, we get to see it, but we have to want it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herr Schulfenman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We are actually behind on a commercial, so let's do the pledge.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Shul Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest, bestest way? RabbiFinman.com. www.rabbifinman.com. It's been the same since 2004. Show's been on for 18 years, but RabbiFinman.com only came around then, which is a pity because I would really like to have had digital recordings of all those shows from 1996 to 2004. Have them in tape somewhere in the archives of the Jewish radio, deep in the bowels of the beast, but tape is kind of hard to work with these days. Contact me. I'll contact you. It's right there on the homepage. What else will you find? You'll find the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, Hasidic U story, which is missives on the portion of the week, the Jewish calendar, some stories there and there, and other media other than this one, to hopefully entertain you and educate you in the insights of Judaism. You'll also find the classes page. This is a very in-depth study of Hasidic philosophy, and you can listen to it. People who said that they didn't have any prior background to Hasidic philosophy, Jewish for Judaism, have told me that they really like and get a lot out of the classes on the classes page. So go there. We've been doing that one since 2009 and posting them. And you'll also find the very important donations page. We are at the end of July, and it is getting really close to August, and we're almost about ready to pay July. We're not bad. I'm not worried, because I know after 18 years of doing this, people like you, and again, I'm using the you singular, have come through. They've gone to RabbiFinman.com, clicked on the donations page, clicked a number. It's all very safe, secure, through PayPal. And have donated to the Jewish Hour. If everybody listening, now I'm talking you plural, would go to the Jewish Hour, would go to RabbiFinman.com and click on $5. I don't even know if there's a $5. I think the smallest one is 10. But if you would just write in even $5, if all the listeners would do that, and you would do that every single month, we wouldn't have to do this minute and a half appeal for the show, and we could be doing something that's a little bit more interesting rather than me just conveying blessings upon you for doing this in advance. So go do it today. Don't like doing it that way? I understand. Rabbi Finman takes mail via the mailman, too. The address is 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's going to do it for the show. Unfortunately, we don't have a time for the specific story, but I will post it, God willing, in the on the e-parsha this week. So you look for it there. It'll be posted to Rabbi Finman sometime around Wednesday. And thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. And we hope to see you back again next week. Take care. Yeshua, save me.